cults over here.
Cults over there.
There are cults
everywhere.
And we're going to tell you all about it with a fairy tale twist.
Welcome to
Once Upon a Cult.
Once upon a time, there was a group of Christians who were like, let's sacrifice all the people and all the babies. Yay! In the name of God. Blessed be.
Woo!
No, that wasn't a good one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So today, we're talking about Order of the Solar Temple, also known as Ordre des Temples Solaires.
You are not very French.
I'm not French. Can you say it for us, Alan, in French?
I should have wrote it down.
Oh, you didn't write down the French version
of it? I did not. Wait.
Are you trying to
The Ordre du Temple Solaire? That one?
That's exactly how I said it.
Yeah.
No. He said it better.
It also might be known as the International Chivalric Organization of the Solar Tradition, mm-hmm. or just the Solar Temple.
Many options. And trigger warnings. So there's unalivings of self and others.
Unalivings. I like that.
Yes. Well, it's what people do now, because if you say those things like suicide and murder on TikTok, you get like, you get censored. So yeah. People now like say things like, she unalived herself, or he unalived her.
That's so weird that you get censored. Why?
It makes no sense. But yeah, trigger warnings for the unaliving of self and others.
Yes. And trigger warning, my name is Sean.
My name is Rachel.
And I'm Alan.
You're so mysterious. All right, so let's get into the Order of the Solar Temple. So the first time this appeared in history was in 1952. This was a group established by Jacques Breyer, who established the Sovereign Order of the Solar Temple. What?
That's not the information I had.
Well, I'm getting there.
Okay. Because mine starts all the way back with Joseph de Mambro when he's born and starts two other cults before starting this one. Okay.
So in 1968, there was another group called, there was a schism in the Jacques Breyer group. So they split off, and a second group was named Renewed Order of the Solar Temple by a right-wing activist named Julian Oragas. It's always those right wings. And then the actual Solar Temple that we're talking about today started in the magical of all years, 1984, by Joseph de Mambro and Luc Jouret.
All right.
There's a lot of things here that are really interesting to me, because not only is it 1984, but I've also, because of my book, been very interested in Geneva lately, and I just read Frankenstein. Yeah, I just read the whole Frankenstein book when we went to San Francisco.
Lovely.
So this is a nice little kismet thing.
Yes. Well, yes, and so another interesting thing is there was actually a complete full organization that didn't have to overlap with any of those, starting with Joseph de Mambro way far back. So, like, Joseph was the brains of the operation, and later on he brought in the brawn, the personality, that was our other guy, whose name I always forget.
Jouret.
Yes, Luc. Luc Jouret. So, Joseph was born in 1924 in France, and he was really close to his mother. And this is all we know about him for the first 30 years of his life. And I don't even know what that means.
Well,
he was sleeping with her.
Well, they said that his dad left the family at a young age, and that's kind of...
Yeah, she was a single mom.
Yeah, and that's kind of how he started his, like... One thing I read or saw was he was, like, a cult collector. So he would join a bunch of cults. I mean, and obviously he started two cults. But yeah, a lot of people said that that linked back to, you know, him not having a father figure and him trying to find a family.
Childhood trauma.
Yeah.
It hits again, strikes again. Yes. So we didn't know much about his first 30 years. Apparently he was a jeweler and a clockmaker, but not a lot about that. And in 1956, he joined an existing organization called the Ancient and Mystic Order of the Rosy Cross.
Rosicrucians!
Yes! Which is actually kind of became one of their main focuses. The Ancient Mystic Order, Amork, is what they're called.
Amork and Mindy?
Yeah!
Yes!
And they're still around today. If you go to rosicrucian.org, you can join today and you can start your lessons and become an order of them. And really, this is more of like a secret society where they're all about philosophy and the mysteries of life. So this group isn't so much about, like, it's more about learning about the mysteries and all those things, but it's not necessarily about getting together and do rituals. But I feel like there's a lot of like branches off them that are that. And it gave him a really good starting point. He learned a lot of interesting things because honestly, this group, if they kind of wanted to get money from people, they could do it with all like the lessons and everything they do, but they don't really have someone at the top of the organization leading things. So they're not taking advantage of all this knowledge. And Joseph was like, I can make money off of this. This is what I can do. And so he left Amork in 1969 and kind of in the in-between times to show you what a cool guy he kind of is. He was arrested for impersonating a psychologist at one point. And he also got in trouble for writing bad checks. So also fraud. So clearly a winner.
Clearly.
And in 1973, he opened the Center for the Preparation of a New Age. And with that, he brought along the knowledge that this is going to be crazy, you guys. Did you know that he is a reincarnation?
Yeah.
And maybe you're like, of one kind. No. As any good leader of these groups we look at, he is the reincarnation of Osiris, of Moses, of Jesus, but also...
What made me laugh about Jesus is he's the third reincarnation of Jesus. So I'm like, who was the second one?
Oh, but what I love about that is he is the reincarnation of Jesus, but he's also the reincarnation of the soldier that stabbed Jesus with the spear. And I'm like, well, that's weird. That's kind of, how can you be both?
Yeah.
But
that's pretty... suicidal.
We don't say that.
Sorry. Yeah.
That's
unaliving. Self-unaliving.
pardon me. But also, not only was, like, unlike some of the other ones, not only he was reincarnated, his followers, the people that chose to follow him were also reincarnations. But they usually didn't, they weren't reincarnated of many. Like, they were always one specific person. Yeah. And I'd also heard it kind of that he would kind of, like, give and take that and be like, hey, you're Marilyn Monroe. And then later would be like, no, you're not. So, an interesting way to operate.
Yeah.
And from the very beginning, even starting with this very first group, apparently he exerted a lot of control to where he chose who should be married and who could have children. And the reason that he could do this is because he could see his followers' life cycle in his mind's eye.
Oh, so he's like, remember Death Note, Alan, the Shinigami? Mm-hmm. They can see how long you're going to live.
Yeah.
And so through his selective breeding, he could create the most powerful offspring.
Offspring.
And he's the only one with this knowledge.
Gotta keep them separated.
Hey. And so before he met his good friend Luke, he met Miguel Dubochnik, who was a Swiss orchestra conductor. And he joined and had extensive knowledge of the occult. And he ended up writing a lot of the guides that the Solar Temple would eventually end up following. And together, he and Dubochnik and a handful of their followers relocated to Geneva, Switzerland in 1978. And at this point, they also rebranded. So they were no longer whatever that old name was. Now they are the Foundation of the Golden Way. I feel like we've heard of a Golden Way before.
Oh, and we're going to hear of it again in this episode.
Oh, good. And it was at this point that they really started to target, like, kind of more wealthy individuals and really respected individuals. Yeah. So you either had to have, like, wealth clout or, like, personality clout or something. And that was also when they shifted and they're like, let's look more at these Knights Templar. We should, like, have some of our beliefs be around the Knights Templar. And as we may remember, this group is a Catholic military order that was started back in 1119. And it was bigger between the First and Second Crusades. The original knights would escort rich people to Jerusalem. And because they did this, they also would then hold on to rich people's items while they were on the journey. And then when the people got back, they would charge them interest for the things they held from them. So they made a lot of money over taking people to the Holy Land and holding their stuff while they did it.
Wow.
And they actually got a lot of power and wealth through this. And it became kind of like a secret society where it was also getting a little bit more like there were some rituals and like it was a brotherhood, very close bondedness. But then King Philip of France was really in debt. And so he saw them as an easy target. And so he destroyed them so that he could take their money. And that's when they went underground. So, like, apparently they're kind of still around. But because so many of them had, like, been burned and killed and had their money stolen, they were very, very secretive for good reason. Because otherwise they would be murdered. And so it was, like, very Catholic in its upbringing. But they had to be quiet about it. And nowadays there's, like, certain beliefs there. Like, the fact that there's the Ascended Masters. And De Mambo claims that he is an ascended master now. He's like, just discovered it, you guys. Guess what? We're going to start doing more of this because I'm an ascended master of the Knights Templar. And so it's at this point that we meet Luke. But before Luke joins in with him, who Luke was born in 1947 in the Belgian Congo, but then they moved back to Belgium, his family. And he was kind of communist leanings. He became a part of the army and was a paratrooper. But he also attended a university and the University of Brussels and became a physician. But a little bit after that, he's like, ugh, this is so boring. I like acupuncture and homeopathy. So he started doing those things and he started a clinic and started getting some followers and he leaned more into New Age beliefs and the Knights Templar. And so he started looking for other people that kind of had these beliefs. And that's where he met De Mambo, who introduced him to Julian Origas. So before they kind of teamed up, De Mambo was like, hey, look at this Origas guy. And that's how they joined up initially. And Origas was a Nazi, which is great. Definitely a white supremacist. Like, and he literally was a Nazi. It's not like he had Nazi beliefs. He, during World War II, had a uniform, worked with the Nazis.
Wow.
And you might notice there's a lot of cross between Knights Templar and white supremacy. It's the thing that likes to go hand in hand for reasons. And it was with him that they were the renewed order of the temple. And Origas was in charge and Jure joined in with him. And yeah, and it was eventually then that they combined afterwards back with De Mambro to become the big super thing because Origas died and Luke tried to make a go at getting the power. But then Origas's family was like, oh no, you stop this ritual right now. You will not be handed the sacred baton. And so he was a little bit sad. And so he took a bunch of the followers from there and was like, I'm going to go see my friend De Mambro, and we're going to start our own cult.
Well, and apparently De Mambro didn't see himself as charismatic, and he was leading Foundation Golden Way at the time. And he saw Jure, who was a physician and who had this following. So people were like, he's a doctor. He must be true.
Yeah.
So Demombro was like, hey, I can make him the face.
Yes.
And I'll be the brains. So Jure was leading the arch, and Demombro was leading the Foundation Golden Way. And then they were like, hey, let's combine our cults into a super cult.
Yeah.
And then that's when they named it the Order of the Solar Temple.
Yay.
Or in French, what is it, Alan?
You could just clip what I said earlier in.
Okay.
Temple.
Temple.
Yes, and it's so interesting because Jure, I feel like, was totally like an influencer, right? Like, he kind of had some bunk teachings that he was peddling, and just all these people would pay money to like go to his talks and follow him, which is kind of interesting. And I guess, like, though he started kind of like talking about wellness, he slowly started kind of turning things a little bit more apocalyptic, to where he was telling his followers that it was the age of Aquarius. It was at hand. And so they needed to start cleansing their souls in order to make it through this time. And a big message of the Order of the Solar Temple is like, you can be cleansed and you can make it through this age of Aquarius by coming to us. Like, our organization will get you through it.
Aww.
Just pay us money.
Yeah.
Just pay us so much money.
Just give us money. It's very Scientology, because you had to pay money, like, for anything. Like, if you were going to rise up in the ranks, you had to, like, buy gifts for the leaders, or you had to pay your initiation fees. And that's how you got more information. But to kind of set it up, this group, this group is very odd to me, because they are a Christian group. They want to spread the word of God, but they're also heavily inspired by Aleister Crowley.
Hmm.
And when I think about Aleister Crowley, I don't think of Christianity.
No, I think of sex magic.
I think of sex magic. They also believe in UFOs, Alan. UFOs, aliens are real.
I mean, we all should believe by now.
We all should believe by now.
The government told us it was true.
And they borrowed a lot from the Freemasons also. Like, a lot of their rituals are very much like the Freemason rituals, which, again, like, the Freemasons were kind of known for maybe not being so Christian, but there's rumors. Nothing's evidenced.
Because it's secret. Secret societies make it hard to research them because they keep so many secrets.
They keep so many secrets.
Yes. So with the kind of like getting the knowledge and going through the levels, it was actually Jure that introduced, like, starting at the beginning at least, these three levels that you could get into. So it started with the A Mantra Club, and kind of an intro level part of that is you could first become an observer for 3 to 6 months, where you like kind of watch and see if this is something you wanted to join. But when you were ready to join and be part of the A Mantra Club, it was 142 Swiss francs per quarter that you would pay, and you would get a white cape. They got capes, you guys. Capes. And yeah, and then at this point, your job was to then kind of spread the word. It was really them that were trying to get more people to come to Jure's talks and advertise them and organize them, so that he would just have to show up and get his talk, and then they would be able to get more members in. So very kind of pyramid schemey as well, because you got to kind of get in, and then your big job is to get other people in. And in these talks, he was really introducing that apocalyptic ideology, where it's the end of the world via the collapse of the environment or super volcanoes, one of the two, or maybe both. Why not both? But if you join, you could be saved. And then level two is the Arcadia Club. I've been to Arcadia. I didn't know that they had a club.
It's spelled different.
Oh, okay.
Jeez.
Sad. But only the worthy would be invited to this. So this wasn't even something where you could just come and pay the money. You had to be invited because you were considered wealthy. And so it really was kind of middle class could get into this. And at this point, last one we knew how much it cost, this one it then became very unclear. Like there was no written down. It's like, oh, call to find out how much this package will be. And if you did, you got more advanced knowledge and a red cape. And then there was level three, which we went from this club and that club to the International Knighthood Chivalric Organization of the Solar Temple. A little bit of a mouthful. And they got a black cape.
Oh.
And with this one, honestly, this is at the point where you really saw only the richest people being able to get into it for the amount of money that they required. And apparently also this level required severe discipline, whatever that means. So yeah, we have some levels going on like any good organization has.
What do you want to talk about, sir?
So did, have we gotten to the, or have we gotten past where he, Joseph, fathered his child? Cause they're kind of important.
We didn't talk about that.
Yeah. So in 1982, at the age of 58 years old, by the way, he actually fathered a child with one of his members, Dominique Bellantin, and named his daughter Emanuela, which will come later on in this story. But
yeah, it will be important.
Yes. But it's interesting because his followers believe that she was born out of Immaculate Conception.
I love this. I have questions.
Yeah.
You literally know the person that he had this child with.
But I'm also like, if she was born from Immaculate Conception, then is she your daughter?
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Like, it's one thing when Immaculate Conception is a woman birthing it, but like, this is like, oh, he did this immaculateness without a woman. How?
She came out of my butt.
I mean, it's the most efficient way, really.
Yeah. And one thing too. Oh, did you say one?
No, go ahead.
Okay. One thing I found about Mr. Jure, he seems like a fun-loving physician who happens to be charismatic. But you know what he would tell his followers?
What?
Hey, chicky babe. I used to be Jesus. So I've got some authority to tell you that I need you to have sex with me so that I can get energy to speak to the masses.
I mean, that's usually the way I get my energy, is through sex. Like, it just gets deposited within me.
Ew.
Yeah, but they always take it right to sex, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Always. Like, and apparently this guy is super charismatic. Like, do you really need to claim all this extra stuff to get that? Or can't you just like go off of the already normal charismaticness that you have?
Well, that's how I get Alan to sleep with me.
That makes sense.
Oh, hey, it's good to know.
Babe. I'm Jesus.
Oh, wow.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So also another kind of red flag with this group is the central authority was a group of 33 men known as the Synarchy of the Temple, and they were known as the Elder Brothers, and you talked about Rosie Cross earlier, so that kind of came over from the older groups into this one, and just like many other cults, they would make all the decisions.
Yeah, and I think that came from because at that time that was created, there was like thousands of members in like Canada, Switzerland, and France. So because of that, they kind of had to create like some sort of hierarchy and plant them in different locations too, since they can't be everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So they would form lodges, like Alan said, in mostly Canada, where else did you say France?
And Switzerland, Switzerland.
There were a lot of French-speaking places because it was like specifically kind of the Quebec area of Canada, I think. Apparently, you just had to be really French to appreciate them.
Yeah. So at these lodges, there'd be a regional commander. That sounds to me like the assistant to the regional manager. Mm-hmm. And there were three elders that would oversee the lodge. Each lodge had an altar, rituals, and costumes, which just really brings back memories of Du Mollet.
Yeah.
The Freemason group I was part of as a kid.
Were their capes as good?
Yes.
Oh.
They were black, and they had, like, gold lining, and they had a little, like, thing on the chest.
Oh, that's so fancy.
So fancy. And then members would go through a ritual and ceremony anytime they graduated from one level to the next. We talked about how much money they were paying for jewelry, costumes, regalia, and the initiation fees. And then also, this is my favorite part, De Mombro would come in and be like, hey guys, want to touch my sword? And then they'd be like, oh yeah, no, you can't touch my sword. This is an authentic sword. It's from the Knights Templar, but I got it when I was one. I got it in my past life when I was a Knights Templar. You can't touch it. It's real. It's thousands of years.
Wow.
I love this guy.
Yeah. And they really ran this cult like a business.
Yeah.
But of course, probably not doing all the right things, like paying taxes, because it sounds like later on they were being kind of investigated because they had been just laundering tons of money. So I'm really curious to know what else was going on that they had all this money to launder.
Well, it was said that a lot of members actually left at one point because they saw just how extravagant the lives of the Mombro and Jure were. And they're like, oh, that's where my money's going. Nothing to the organization, all to them. Mm. So we start to see, like, towards the early 90s here. So we're going to have some fun, culties. The members were starting to wane. So at this point, it was believed by the members that Earth is coming to an end. So a lot of the members would buy farms. They started hoarding weapons and ammo. And eventually, as that belief started to not hold people to the group, suddenly it changed to, well, the Earth isn't going to, like, destroy, because the Earth isn't real. It's an illusion, Michael.
An illusion.
Sorry, I had to get Arrested Development in there. So it was thought that they would shed their Earth skin and ascend to Sirius, the moon Sirius.
Yay!
Out of all the moons, the star, sorry.
The dog star.
You were right.
Like Mr. Black.
Yep, Sirius Black. So that's where we start getting into a little more of a dangerous belief, a little more of a Heaven's Gate belief going on here.
Yeah, and even Joseph De Mombro. even his daughter was also starting to question her dad, too. Apparently, when they were having their rituals, they would have, like, holograms in the background.
Yeah.
And she actually, like, exposed him, like, telling people, like, hey, this is fake. So even
his son called it out.
Oh, his son.
The son was probably jealous because he didn't get to be the second coming of Christ, because he was not the child of wonder or whatever. There was a gentleman that created these holograms, and this gentleman is important. But it became part of the rituals that this guy would create those, and people would just be in awe. And I just, like, I'm so curious to see what this looked like, to where people didn't realize they were holograms.
Well, and I read it went a step further, too, because the son, I'm not sure how you say his name. It's E-L-I-E, so Eli? Ellie? Eli?
Eli.
Apparently, Eli said, too, that the illusions were sometimes even put into people's homes, so they would feel like they're having visions in the privacy of their own home. So, yeah, I'm really curious as to, like, how do you not know
Yeah, because like you also think about like projector sort of things. And like, so in this time, in the 90s, 80s and 90s, like, do you remember like when people would want to like project a thing, like how loud some of those were? Like, what were they using to create these projections and then to make them that portable?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like now it's hard to get a good portable projector.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this where we should start talking about the projectionist?
This is, I didn't know he was a projectionist. That's interesting.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is, I found a date. This is September 30th, 1994. And this is where we're going to have a kind of streamline of just chaos. Death and unaliving and death.
Yeah, so Tony Dutoit, he had been there. He'd been clearly part of an inner circle to be the one helping to create these illusions.
Michael.
These illusions, Michael. But he had, I think having that inner kind of sight into everything also kind of probably brought him to the point where he's like, you know what? I'm kind of like, maybe I don't want to be part of this anymore and I want some distance from this. And to add to that, he and his wife had been giving the blessing to have a child, but then had a miscarriage. And so that obviously very hard for them. And then they wanted to try to continue to have a child, but DeMombro forbid it because remember, he's in charge of who gets to have babies and that selective breeding program that he has going on. And he declared that the reason that they had the miscarriage was because they like were not worthy. Oh. And super rude. How, that's not nice. They already have sadness going on. How dare you? And they were like, no, we're going to have a baby. And so they had a baby boy, and named him Emmanuel.
How dare he?
And so first of all, they weren't even supposed to have this baby. This was a forbidden baby. And then the fact that Emanuela is the chosen Christ child must mean that through this baby being the opposite, being a boy, being Emmanuel, is clearly her polar opposite, which is the Antichrist.
Oh.
And as such, it was declared that he must be dispatched along with the whole family, because how dare they? So DeMombro used his power to get some of his followers to brutally murder all of them.
Well, and like for the 3 month, they stabbed it repeatedly with a wooden stake.
So a wooden stake.
Yeah, that's brutal.
At last I heard the Antichrist is not a vampire. So I'm a little confused with the method. Also, don't kill babies.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just don't do that.
I wonder though, like why I feel like they would have known that naming their baby Emmanuel is probably like a F you. Like, I wonder if they did that on purpose or, you know, if it's just a coincidence, but I don't know. Yeah.
Like, he was already so angry at them. Yeah. Like, can you imagine being like, yeah, we can name him.
Yeah. I wonder too if it maybe was a misguided way to get back into his good graces by being like, we're naming our child after yours. But yeah, I could see it as an F you. I could see it as like that, or just maybe they just didn't realize.
Yeah.
But yeah, some people from the group said that later DeMombro actually straight up said, like, yeah, I killed them because they shared secrets that they weren't supposed to share. So the Antichrist thing may have just been like, eh, this is a good enough reason.
At least something that he could put out as a reason to convince the followers.
Yeah.
Because obviously he knows things. He knows he doesn't have this mystical stuff, or maybe he believes it now. Maybe he believes his delusions.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you're having to get other people to do it for you, you need to sometimes do it in a way to where like, you can't just be like, oh, I want them dead. Yeah. You have to find your altruistic reason that they must do it for the good of the world and the good of the group.
He should have just said that they gave away trade secrets about how I fake these things.
He was telling people about my fake projections.
So now, to set the scene for the next little red wedding, you have to imagine where Dimambro is at this point. So he just has ordered this family killed who shared his secrets with some people. His son has recently outed him as a fake. Also, his group is getting smaller and smaller. So some believe that at this point he was just very depressed, very wanting to unalive.
And he's like, well, pretty old by now. He's in his 70s.
He's pretty old.
Yeah. He was actually, around this time too, he was diagnosed with cancer.
He was.
And he also became incontinent, which... Yeah, so
it's just not going good. It's almost like he made horrible choices in life, and now he is feeling the badness of the universe come back on him. It's almost like that.
So now it's September 30th. The Dutoits are dispatched, and now it's October 3rd. It might have been October 2nd, the night of, when he had the Last Supper, they call it. Mm-hmm. So he basically gathered all his inner people and was like, hey, let's have some supper. Let's party. And then the next day is when the mass suicide / murder started happening in Sherry and Salvin. There are two villages in Switzerland and at Morin Heights. So altogether, 15 people from the inner circle committed suicide with poison. 30 were killed by bullets or smothering. They say that because a lot of them were found with a bag over their head. So it's unclear if they suffocated or if they died of the bullet wounds. And then 8 by other means. But what some people talked about is how odd is it that the night before he had the supper and the next day a lot of people were found with drugs in their system. So some people think he fed them drugs at the supper in order to more easily have them either kill themselves or be killed by somebody else. Because a lot of these were believed to not be suicide, much like Jonestown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very similar. And weren't they like found in an interesting space? Like when you kind of went into the main area, it wasn't there, but it was like through this secret area?
Yeah, it was described as a secret underground chapel.
Ooh, with mirrors.
Mm-hmm. With mirrors and a lot of other Templar regalia. And also the way that they were laid out, they were laid in circles with their feet like touching. Mm-hmm. And they were around like in a circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one thing that some people have talked about is Eli, Dimambro's son, was said to have left the church. But
he was still there.
Well, he was one of the dead bodies. So people are like, either he didn't leave or they coerced him or they
brought him back by force.
Brought him by force and killed him.
Yeah.
So that brought down the mood a little bit.
Yeah, it did. Mm-hmm. Well, and what's interesting now is like this was only in one place. This was the one in Switzerland. There's still kind of people over in Canada and France, was this the one where they did find Joe's body with them?
Yes, he was found with those ones,
and John's was found, or Luke Jure's was found, correct?
There were other bodies found at 3 ski chalets, including children. And I kind of think this was interesting because they set up timed explosives in order to start a fire, so that way the police were able to find the bodies pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. But, so even though, like, now the main people of this movement are gone, and these were probably, like, top-level believers, as well as the people that they, you know, kind of forced into it, they all went out in this, but then later we had more occurrences. So even after they were gone and they didn't have this leader pushing people that way, we had 2 more instances of these kind of suicides and then burning down of the building within it. So like there's clearly a lot of indoctrination that went on. Like the fact that even when the leaders weren't there, they're like, well, we'll follow soon. And I guess one thing I heard is also there's probably a lot more information about this if you speak French. Yeah. Because all these places, there's a lot more details written in French articles and books. But not a lot has been translated into English. And it's so interesting because it, like, this is on par with a Jonestown, but not as many people know about
this. Yeah, I didn't really know a lot about this until we looked it up. Mm-hmm. But at the scene of the murder-suicide, there was a letter that said they wanted to escape the hypocrisies and oppression of the world. And like Rachel said, there's another I almost called it a mass murder side. I'm just going to go with that.
Murder side.
That one was actually thwarted in the late 1990s, luckily, because apparently a lot of these, they tried to have take place around like the solstice. Mm. Or like big days, so the authorities were able to find that one. But like you said, in sometime between the 15th and 16th of December of 1995, they tracked down another murder-suicide. They found it on the 23rd, so they found it a week after, so that's why they don't know exactly when it happened. Mm-hmm. But they were found in the mountains of France, and it was later seen that actually, two of the men out of the 16 murdered 14 of them and then murdered themselves.
Yeah.
So it's like they had Jouret and DeMombro had like a few people who were so loyal that they were willing to murder other people in their name.
Mm-hmm. And at this site, like they arranged the bodies in like this cross, mm-hmm. or not cross, star formation. And I think I watched part of a documentary where there was a surviving member today who he had been owed money by someone within the cult. And they're like, hey, I have your money for you. Come by. And he went there. And when he arrived at the place, they're like, come inside, come inside. He went in and it just like reeked of like petrol. So then he just like ran out of there and left them. And then like, the next day, everything was found. So, like, wow. They clearly lured him in to try to murder him.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's loyalty.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Part of what made me want to talk about this one, and I think it's really interesting. I think there's a really interesting lesson here. Because when I was with Alan, the week before that, Alan, when I went to Philadelphia, I read kind of an explaining of the Satanic Bible. So I think this is a good example of just because something's Christian or just because something's satanic, it's not always black and white. Like, this group did some awful things in the name of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And when you read the Satanic Bible, they talk about how, like, animals are sacred. Like, we don't hurt animals. They talk about, like, children are sacred. We don't hurt children because they have this magic in them, which is what lets them kind of experience the spirit world. Mm-hmm. And I make jokes with Alan that I watch Power Rangers so I can see ghosts.
This makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really interesting because, like, a lot of people, I know we talked about this, think that Satanists believe in Satan and they just want to kill everything, but it's more just a way of life and they don't believe in Satan. Mm-hmm. So I just think we could all learn a lesson from, like, when you hear things on the news about Republicans saying, like, a satanic group murdered this or a satanic group did that. Like, Satan isn't always bad. It's just something that's used just to scare people.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the whole satanic panic was, there were no actual Satanists going on in all of that. Kind of weird. And it's fear-mongering as well. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think any belief, when taken to the extreme and wielded by the wrong people, can really pose a danger. And mm-hmm. that could be whether it's a Christian belief, whether it's a Muslim belief, whether it mm-hmm. is a satanic church belief. Like, there's always good people in there. There's always bad people in there. It really depends on how it's wielded.
Because, yeah, mm-hmm. I know that there has been some groups here or there who have murdered in the name of Satan. It happens. But then there's also good Christians. So we can't just say, like, any full group is evil. There's always good and bad within any group, like Rachel said. So the world needs to learn this lesson.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at where the idea is coming from, too, and who that person is, and kind of hopefully try to weed out the BS that they try to say or you leverage with whatever they want to say. Because, yeah, I mean, whether it be, yeah, like Satan, God, Allah, Buddha, you know, people, there's some bad people out there.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say that if you're religious belief is based on how much money you give, it's probably not great.
Probably something to question.
Yeah, if to learn more about your religion, you have to pay more money, probably not great. Like, I understand there's tithing where, like, you go to church and you tithe and you give money because that's part of what keeps the church going, but they're also not withholding, like, this is what we believe in.
Like, everyone knows the same information no matter how much money they put in the plate as it passes by. Yeah. It's not like, oh, now that you've put this certain amount, come to this other side room. We have some more extra special secrets for you.
Yeah. Does your pastor happening. Really need a private jet? I don't know.
I mean, I need a private jet, so
do I.
Just because I could do so much more travel. Though, honestly, I get annoyed by how much gas costs for cars right now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, paying for jet fuel seems like it would be pretty daunting.
That's true. It's very true.
Yeah, so I saw an interesting question out there about this when people talked about it, where they were like, so is this a cult or is this an esoteric society that got out of hand? And it was like, I don't know. Do you guys have initial thoughts on that? Like, I guess that goes into our tenets, right?
Yeah, so maybe that's a good question to think of while we're going through our tenets, and then we could answer it from there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, charismatic leader, we talked about DeMombro, not so much, but Jure.
He knew what to do. He brought someone in.
Hey, Rachel.
Yeah?
I'm Jesus. Can I fuck you?
Yes. I love Jesus.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How about alienation?
I love alienation. Well, so this one, I feel like they weren't necessarily, like, alienating the cult members from society. But by the way, they were doing this kind of this pay to play thing where you got more knowledge, the higher you got. They really took this idea of like, hey, you guys know secrets that no one else does, and kind of weaponized that to make money. And then these cult members, I guess one of the things I saw, it talked about how like there was a lot of smart people that were in this cult. And then they were also the kind of people that like really dug the idea that they knew more than other people, that they were, you know, while others weren't. So there it's like not necessarily they were alienated and not able to take it, but they really kind of put themselves above the rest of society that didn't know these secrets and just weren't as smart as them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like, it's different, but it is an alienation of sorts, like thinking of yourself as the other.
I can see that. And like, it's to the point where I can see like a lot of other groups, like we talked about this with Nexium, who is also a lot of very smart people who got taken in by Keith.
Such an evil name.
And except for Barbarian.
He wasn't evil. I'm so confused.
So by having the structure of like the smarter you are, the more you go up, like the more you pay, the more you know. I could see how that makes it like, well, why would I want to speak to people in these lower groups? Now I'm with these 32 other people and only we get each other because only we have this information. So yeah. I could see how the further you get in, the further you're kind of alienating yourself.
Yes. Yeah, no, I totally agree.
People
I mean,
can't
it's...
hear your head shaking.
No, I mean, it's kind of, it's like the opposite, right? Where, yeah, like what you guys said, you're protecting your group from society in a way. Like you're,
Yeah.
How about belief system?
Yes.
You're a man of many words.
They have beliefs.
Yeah.
they with the whole doomsday thing and then moving over to basically like who cares about our bodies on Earth, like we're moving on anyway.
It's the age of Aquarius, dude.
Age of Aquarius.
Mysterious.
Outside evil.
I don't know that there's so much an outside evil. They definitely like kind of peddled the idea of like come to us and we'll like keep you safe through this. But I didn't see a lot of stuff around them really like saying that they were being attacked by those from outside or.
Yeah, well, when they were more the doomsday cult, they were preparing for like a battle, like people rising up and fighting. So I guess I guess it wasn't like a specific outside evil, but they definitely kept them in check by like holding that over their head. Like, this is coming. The apocalypse is coming. You have to be ready for it.
And the only way to be ready for it was to be part of them.
Exactly. And sense of community.
Yeah.
Yes.
They wore capes together. Oh, if that doesn't say community, I don't know what does.
No capes. No capes.
No.
So I guess based on that and based on your question earlier, is this just an esoteric group out of control? No, it's a cult.
I agree. they really were leaning into like, I think it's just an esoteric group that got out of control. No. Like this guy went and took the learnings from multiple cults.
Yeah.
And like, and he did it for financial gain and he did it to control other people, which is so different from like a fraternal brotherhood thing. Like there's so many of those that are like completely harmless, and maybe this one had some of those, but he was definitely using everything in the way that a cult leader would.
Well, and it's funny that I feel people would question this being a cult, but I feel like we're all on the same page that Nexium is a cult.
Yeah,
so like with them being almost to me the same thing, except for this one didn't so much offer like the classes like Nexium did.
They had some classes.
They had some.
But they weren't about success. They were about, like, life mysteries.
Yeah. I'd say if you say Nexium's a cult, this one's a cult by default. Like, it even has the Jure guy, like, sleeping with women.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For sure.
For sure. Well, that was fun. I love talking about some baby murder, some mass suicide murders. Like,
you too?
Murder-sides.
Murder-sides.
We love this. It's unaliving. Our favorite. Yeah. Our favorite.
Well, good, because next week, we're or 2 weeks, I always do that, in 2 weeks, we're talking about Sufism reoriented.
Ooh.
Sufism.
I don't know if it's like Sufism or Sufism.
Sufism.
I don't know. I haven't done the research yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of times when we are saying what's coming up next, we haven't actually looked into it yet. We just get kind of a vague understanding that this could be a cult.
Yeah, and we look at the general idea of them, and they're like, eh. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But we got to get Cheesecake Factory for this.
Yes. We should totally like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, we should go order some and then eat it. And we'll do some ASMR.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. We're going to order it and eat it?
I was just going to smell it.
You're crazy.
Yeah.
Rachel.
Yes.
Where can they find you?
You can find me on A Real Bodice Ripper, where I talk about romance novels with my dear friend Jesse and how they could be problematic and also delicious.
Jesse or the novels?
Oh, definitely Jesse. Definitely.
I think I'm funny.
You are funny.
And you can also find Rachel this Friday on Solving for X, rounding out the Phoenix Saga in the episode Child of Light.
Yay!
It was a surprise. You get to hear my surprise.
Yeah.
Since Kevin doesn't tell me who's coming on until they're there.
Yay! I was a surprise, and I kept the secret this time.
You did. Oh, no, Kevin's going to know. Alan, where can we find you?
Yeah, and you can also find us on Marvelous Galaxy of Disney, where we talk about Disney stuff every week.
Yay!
Yay! And since I already talked about one, you can also find me on Hanging with the Hollowells, or now Words of the Witches, where Kevin and I are talking about seasons 6 through 8 of Charmed, and now in Words of the Witches, we're talking about the comics.
Yay!
Oh, you need to see the artwork for the comics. I need to show you.
Oh, girl. This is beautiful.
You can listen to our episodes on the comics and how much I love the art.
Yay! Well.
All right. We will see you in 2 weeks with some ASMR.
Oh, no.
Alan likes this.
Alan likes this. Bye.
Bye. Bye.